Well, please help me welcome our speaker tonight. It's Tom F., and his home group is St. James in Bristol.
My name is Tom F., Tom Fury. I'm not known to my own people. And I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, everybody.
I'd like to start by reading page 164 on the big book, starting the third paragraph. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in the morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something that you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him, to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join Him. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And that's from a vision for you. Yes. And I think that pretty sums up my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was born in Levittown, Pennsylvania, 1985, on November 1st. That's All Saints Day. What a joke. I was the youngest. I have three older sisters. Once again, what a joke. And I had a loving loving family. I grew up in a structured home with a mother and a father. Grew up in a great neighborhood with kids all my age, all different ages. And I had a pretty good, I had a very good upbringing. Christmases were great. My family worked hard to keep me and my sisters happy, involved with sports, parents were involved. And, you know, that was pretty much the beginning of my life. But, I don't know, I went to a Catholic school, first through fifth grade. I also served for the church. There was always just this thing when I would hear about God that I could understand everything that was being told to me. But it just didn't sit inside. At the age of 4, I was diagnosed with diabetes. Age 6 through 11 or 12, I had seizures. So I became very familiar with doctors, and life was hard sometimes. And I would get sick, and I just wanted to know why. And, telling some of the guys last time I talked into a microphone, there was two officers across the table asking me what I did the night before. And I didn't know what I did, but I knew what everybody else did. But just one of my favorites. And I don't know. I was real excited all day to come up here. You know, I just couldn't wait for work to get over. I think that's like that every day, but I was really excited to come up here because I heard about this group, and I really enjoy AA. I believe this is how it was in the beginning, when I meet groups like this and then groups around, and exactly what I read, that I'll meet people like me all over this world, you know, and we'll trudge this road of happy destiny. You know, these people who wrote this book and founded AA, they knew something, and they wrote down what they experienced, and it was the truth. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know anything. I was hopeless. And I could comprehend everything that I heard people talking about. I would hear speakers that were happy, smiling, and I could comprehend what they were saying. But it just didn't sit right inside, you know. And I didn't stay around. You know, my story is pretty simple. You know, I started drinking when I was 14, stayed involved with school, And like any good alcohol, by the senior year of high school, I was living in rehab. And somebody made it aware to me that I was like a class of 400 in high school, that a good percentage of the class, when they got off the bus, it wasn't rehab that they went back to, and that I made a difference than the rest of my fellows. That made me take a look, you know, at myself, and I was in a juvenile rehab. I stayed there for 6 months, and it was that the third day that I was there. And I'm going to skip a lot of the war stories because I believe we all have them. I landed myself in juvenile rehab my senior year in high school, and I looked up and I saw these steps, and I admitted that I was an alcoholic for the first time in that rehab. Didn't admit to nobody else. I felt it inside. And the reason that I was able to do that was because about 2 years prior, somebody had come to me and they talked to me about themselves. And this person, I knew this person very well. I mean, this person held me since I was a baby, and it was my neighbor. And he was the counselor of a high school, and I knew him very well. And when he told me about himself, I just saw a cop call the guys. This person, the stories that he disclosed about himself to me was not the person that was sitting in front of me. And it made me raise the question, well, what happened? And he told me. And he told me where I would end up if I didn't get help. And like any good alcoholic, I gave it that one more try, you know. And that's when I landed myself 2 years later in juvenile rehab. And I did everything they told me to do. I mean, this was the type of alcoholic I was. I saw kids that were 14, that were now 17. I said, why are you still on probation? They said that they just kept violating and never got probation. I said to myself inside, I said, I'm not going to be here too. Because when I drink, I need to continue to drink. So I'm going to do this 9 months. I asked my probation officer, I said, how long do I have to be if I do everything right? He said, 9 months. I was on probation for 9 months. Now, I acted like I wanted to get better, and, you know, I had all these, really, I had these great intentions. I'm not going to hurt my family no more. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to steal. I'm going to get a job. I did all that. I graduated high school, you know. I applied to college. I had a good job. I was living at home. I mean, the typical, you know, somebody that would graduate high school, I was doing what I was supposed to do, you know. I went back to that rehab. I had about 2 weeks away from a year of sobriety. And all this time along in that year, I mean, I'm making meetings, and I'm chairing meetings, I'm making coffee, I mean, I'm bringing food to the meetings, I'm branching out, I have fellowships. After I left that meeting, after I left that rehab, I spoke at that rehab that I stayed at. I never made it home. I went home 3 days later. And I had all kinds of reasons and excuses why. But when I was in the room by myself and thinking about it, I was baffled. I had no idea why I drank again. I didn't want to. I had nothing to do with wanting to. Tried to come back to meetings, but I was just caught, you know. I had to drink as much as I didn't want to. Started drinking more. You know, and common sense, being that I'm diabetic, that I probably shouldn't be drinking. Right? Every day I thought about that. But for some reason, even though I would wake up and I know I can't drink, I would drink anyway. And later on I found out through good sponsorship that, you know, parallel with sound reasoning is that insane excuse to drink. And that's what makes me an alcoholic, that's what makes me powerless. You know, that I can do it one more time and I can feel better. I can, you know, get back to the days where I was drinking like everybody else. I can control it. And that's why I'm insane. I'm not insane to the point where, you know, I've been 302, I've been to places like that. But I'm not totally unaware of my reality. I'm not that insane. But my insanity comes to where there's people that drink way more than I ever drank. And they reach a point where they have to stop, and they can go, okay, I'm done, and they stop. That's not in my deck of cards. And life was hopeless. And he just beat me. So I went back to that evening. And I wasn't ready to stop drinking. It was a beautiful day, a summer day out. And it was around this time, March, end of March. And I just looked up to the sky, and I don't know what it was. And I just said, "What do you want me to do?" In my backyard, I just screamed. I wanted to kill myself for the fourth time. And apparently they were alcoholic way before we even pick up a drink. I attempted suicide like two or three times before I ever drank. And I don't know what happened that day. I looked down, and when I looked down, I saw my neighbor's yard, and I went in his backyard and viewed him. I said, "I need help." And you know what? He said, "I know you do." And I was like, "How does he know I do?" Everybody knew I needed help. You know, but my perception when I'm drinking is so far from reality that I think everything's fine as long as I just have that drink. Because I'm not thinking about who I'm hurting, who I'm not talking to. Because when I was a kid, I guess what? I used to go over there every day, even if it was just to say hi for 5 minutes. But when I started drinking, I'd be gone for a year. And he lived right next door to me. So what happened? I went to this meeting that was suggested to go to. It was a big book study. It's not a sanctioned AA meeting, but everybody meets there, and they read the big book, word by word, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, and they talk about exactly what they meant when they wrote the book. And I was in a room full of people at the age of 19. Not that I look much older now. And I was listening to this guy on his podium. And he was he worked in the stock market. And he had a wife. Like, I can't relate to that. I don't relate with mortgages right now. I don't relate with child support. I don't relate with, car payments. I don't have experience with that. That's not what he was talking about at this meeting. He was talking about how he felt on a daily basis when he woke up and didn't have a drink, before he had a drink. And it made sense to me. And I was like, I found maybe I found some people that understand me. Because I've gone to psychologists, psychiatrists, I've talked to family members. He reminded me of my neighbor, because I could relate to my neighbor. And after the meeting, this guy, this kid, was like hyper, and he's like happy, and before the meeting he was bugging me, and I just wanted him to leave me alone. He was bothering me, he was annoying, he was smiling. And and then I started thinking, like, any good alcoholic, oh, I wonder where he's on, because he's that happy, and maybe I should talk to him. But he talked to me about himself and what he went through and how he felt, and I related. And I normally wouldn't talk to somebody like this. I mean, he was from, he was from the city, and he had a city hat with the sales price sticker still on it, and he had all these tattoos. And I really wanted to tell him to leave me the hell alone, but the fact of the matter was, I took his inventory before, he came and talked to me. He was bigger than me, and I knew if I ran my mouth, I probably couldn't beat him. I couldn't fight him. So I just let him talk. And it's probably saved my life that year. And I'll tell you what, I didn't ask for help right away. I listened to him, but I'm still hesitant to join what this fellowship is. And I saw him about, went to two other meetings for 2 days. And he just kept coming up to me and just talking to me and asking me how I felt, which I loved. And I told him how I felt, and he told me how he was doing. And it got me to ask that question, And he started telling me about himself and his sobriety and what he's experienced. And it was attractive. And I had all these misconceptions, you know. I was like, well, you know, because my first time around, I was like, you know, well, how much time do you have? Was my question to him. And he was like, I got 3 months. And again, I would have said this to him, but he was bigger than me. You ain't gonna be helping me. Now, granted, I had like three days, and I was ready to like rip all my hair out. But I'm gonna tell this person a lot more time than me at the time that, you know, I don't want to help. But then this thought came through my head that I'm gonna take your help. I'm gonna take you up on that offer, but if it don't work, if I don't like what's going on, I ain't gonna stick around. I'm gonna go do what I know makes me feel better. And that was a drink. Well, that never happened. What happened was, as soon as I said, you know, I could use some help, can you help me? I never said I wanted to stop drinking. I said, I need some help, can you help me? He didn't say, I'll meet you tomorrow. He didn't say, it was like 10 o'clock at night. He had work. He didn't drive. He was an hour away from where he worked. He took the train. 10 o'clock at night, he said, sure, and he went right over where he was. And we sat down, we did the first 3 steps. And I felt pretty hopeless for the first two. After going through reading step one in the big book, I was faced with a dilemma. I was faced with the fact that my mind would never get over drinking if I couldn't change it. And I couldn't change it on my own power. And then we got to step two. You know, after we went through step one and talked about the disease, you know, I had to start comparing myself to the, not the other 90% of the world, but the 10% that's just like me. You know, and he brought up God, and I said, here we go. And I got geared up with all the armor inside, and, you know, listen, bud, I went to Catholic school, I did the whole altar serving thing, I made the holy water, you know what I mean? And I was like, and it still didn't work out. I used to go to church every Sunday before I would, you know, wake up and drink. I used to run to church every Sunday, spend the hour, feel great. And then I would drive home, and I would be drunk. I would never make it home. So I don't want to hear really about this God thing if there's something else. Well, apparently this book says that there's no middle of the road solution. And that was another dilemma in my life. And he said, are you willing to believe that I believe? And I could physically see it. And I said, yeah, I'm willing to believe that you believe. And he said, do you not believe in God? I said, no. He said, are you willing to believe in something? Yeah. Yeah, I am. I wouldn't have done that. There would have been necessary for me to have done that if I didn't see the need for it. You know, I've never met a new guy just come through the door and is like, all right, I'm ready to find God. Yeah. If there's meetings like that, I'd like to know where they're at, because, you know, I do a lot of work with the guys that I sit down with before they get excited, you know. And I just made a decision. It was real simple. It was real simple. I'm so grateful that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, that these people had a solution for my problem. Right? Like, today I realized that alcohol is not my problem. It was my solution for a long time. But the fact of the matter was that if alcohol never caused a problem in my life, I would have never came to AA. By going through some of the steps, I saw, after going through the fourth and fifth step, that it was the solution to my life. That my problem is sobriety. Staying sober is the problem. And that I'm the problem. And I'm sure all the people have heard that here before. So I just went through the steps. You know, I did a 4-step. And I was so, after going through the first 3 steps, I had like a little fire underneath of me. And I did a 4-step. And again, it was made simple for me because this is simple stuff. And I did it exactly how I was told. And then came the 5th step. And I had to sit down with this guy who I've known for maybe a week and a half. And I have to tell him all the stuff that I did that I used to try and stuff down deep down inside with alcohol. now I don't have alcohol and I have to let this out and stay sober? So I balked and put it off a week. And he called me and he said, if you don't do this fifth step, I'll give you a week to do this fifth step with me. You gotta find a new sponsor. And that scared the hell out of me. But he saved my life. I'll tell you why. Because I remember my previous experience before this one. And I didn't want to go through that again. I didn't know if I could ever find another sponsor that was going to be able to show me what he showed me. This was the first person in my life that I actually honestly was allowing to help me. I didn't let my own parents help me. And I loved them. And that night, I called him. I said, I'm on my way over. And I called my neighbor. And it was like that, I swear, it was like that picture in the, if anybody's ever seen it, the picture of the alcoholic with the two guys on the bedside. It was like that, but I was laying in his bed, and he came in the room, and he said, this is my room, why are you laying in my bed? And he laid in the bed, and I sat on the chair. And Jim sat on the chair, and I did my fifth step. And I walked out of there, free man. Not because I told my all my problems, and I was 19. You know what I mean? Like, what was my problem? My PlayStation was broken? Like, I told him how I felt about situations in the past and everything like that. And he told me some of the stuff with him. And I didn't feel alone anymore. I walked into that room feeling alone. And I walked out. And I sat in my room after that fifth step for an hour. It was just me in my room. And I didn't feel alone anymore. I felt like I was floating. And then I got a phone call an hour later, after I sat down for an hour, and he said, I got something to tell you. Okay? It's not going to last. What? What you're feeling is not going to last. There's more work. You got it. Because if this is what I'm feeling, I want more. And I met up with him, and I had my list in my arms, and I had to go out and make amends to the people that hurt in the world. And I did that. Started looking for the one, because I'm human, I'm going to be selfish, I'm going to be insecure, I'm going to have fear, I'm going to get jealous, I'm going to get mad. And when these things crop up, I have to learn how to get rid of them, because this is what's been going on my whole life. These things crop up and I drink. See, when I get sober, I'm sober. Right now, you know, when I had a day sober, that was as sober as I was ever going to be in my life. Can't get any more sober than that. But fact of the matter was that I was very happy sober, and that somebody was going to teach me how to be happy, joyous, and free. I've been looking at it my whole life. I came into this world resentful. When I was born, I came out crying and yelling. Mad. You know? I found out that I was spiritually sick. And it's really hard to conceptualize spirituality. The only way to get it is to experience it. The only way to experience it, feel it, is spiritual principles. You know what I mean? It's just the fact of the matter. If you do them, it works. You know? I work at a bank. I get people who come in. Why? You know? Why am I not? Why don't I have any money? Why don't you have a savings account? You're not going to accrue money if you don't save. It's just simple concepts they create. This is a spiritual program. It says that if you're alcoholic, you may be suffering from spiritual illness, and only a spiritual experience can conquer. So if you come to Alcoholics Anonymous like I did the first time around, you have all these moral, philosophical glories that the book talks about, like I'm going to be a good kid, I'm going to do this. You're living on your own power. You're on the wrong path. And smashing my head in the hammer with my own will my whole life, why would I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and try it again? You know, and these are just some of the things that I learned. I started to enlarge my spiritual life. and then it came time to sponsor people, and I balked. I was living in a recovery home, and I was asked to leave. My rent was paid. I just wasn't living very. I was on a downhill track, because very slowly, after experiencing all this spirituality and having God back in my life, without even realizing it, it became about me again. And it warned me for that, people. And I wasn't giving away what I was receiving. And before you know it, it was dead again. And I said, no problem, I'll go back home. Yeah, I'll go back home. Well, apparently, God had a funny plan. One of my things that I used to pray about, that was on my my sponsor asked me to make a list of what I would want God to be. And at the time, sister that was a couple of the next up in my family, my sister, she had a kid, and she had my goddaughter. She was living in a very bad apartment, and apparently, during all this time when I got kicked out, my father decided to sell the house to my sister Jen, so she had a house to raise the kid. So my prayer is being answered, but I'm mad because now I have nowhere to live. But I'm praying for that every day. I mean, just talk about insanity. And next thing you know, I'm living. I spent 4 days in the woods next to the school that I went to. Because it was the summer, I knew there was tents in the backyard. And once again, I'm completely sober, and my world's insane. I'm homeless, living in the woods in a tent. You know? And it was unreal. I couldn't believe it. It happened in the past. And luckily enough, I know for a week I called the owner of the house that I was in. They were nice enough to let me back. And I was at a house meeting, and I was very, talking to them. You know, it was my time to share, which I loved, and talking about me. And at the end of it, I was like, I don't know what to do. And somebody said, it sounds like you need to help somebody. And I was like, how is that going to solve my problem? How is that, I don't understand, how is that going to solve this situation, help somebody? Like, I just don't. And the problem was that I was trying to conceptualize how it's going to work, and spirituality doesn't work that way. You know, so I started sponsoring. Just putting my hand up there. I had about 60 days. Didn't matter. It was explained to me that Bill Wilson didn't have very much time when he decided that he was going to go and try and look to help all the alcoholics. So I should probably try and do what the starter did, you know. And it just made sense to me. And I went to meetings. I put my hand up there, and afterwards, some people asked me how much time I had. And I told them, and they told me that I shouldn't be putting my hand up. And I would get mad, but this alcoholic standing right here needs to help somebody in order to stay sober. Dr. Bobber is his nightmare. He thought about drinking for 2 years after he came to Alcoholics Anonymous, unlike most of the members. But it was the fact that he put in his mind that he lost the privilege to drink, and that he helped other people constantly. Constant thought of others will ensure my sobriety. Constant action is what I need to do. You know, I need to put my life down and stop thinking about what I need to do for me. Put my life down for a very small amount of time and just look for somebody that needs some help. And I find joy, I find peace, I find freedom, and it seems like the rest of my problems aren't even really problems anymore, and they just take care of themselves. And that's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I mess up today, I try and clean the house promptly, whether I like it or not. I've learned not to let my feelings dictate my actions. And another thing that I learned that I heard that was great was, I was walking to work. I'm going to share this story. And I stopped at a 7-Eleven, and I got some food for breakfast. And my phone rang. And I was tired, and I just didn't move far enough out of the line. And I'm on the phone, my work, something's going on, and all of a sudden this guy that left me starts cursing at me, calling me every name in the book. And you know, I caught all the feelings that I usually caught. And I asked them to be removed. I mean, that would have ruined my day a long time ago. Would have ruined my whole day, would have ruined my month. You know, and it would have been all his fault. And I mean, I don't know, thank God that there's a better way to live than to be angry all day. It didn't even bother me, you know. I heard that, you know, it's not the circumstances, you know, the problem when something happens, whether your car breaks down, someone cuts you off, someone cursing at you for no justified reason. If I get upset, that's the problem. You know, what AA has taught me and what spirituality has taught me is that I have to act in love, kindness, tolerance at all times, because that's what my Creator would have me do. You know, I believe that my Creator is pure love. People ask me, you know, what's your belief in God, or what do you think He is? Love. That's the end of it. And I just try and be like my Creator. You know? And my life is a lot simpler today because of that. I've gone through some experiences that I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have these steps and new people in my life. You know, I had the passing of my mother 2 years ago for no reason. I don't know why. I could spend the rest of my life trying to figure that out. But every time I ask why my mother died, I'm playing God. It's none of my business what happens in the world today. It's what I'm doing to give back. That's it. You know, I might be powerless over alcohol, but I'm not powerless to wake up and make a decision to do something spiritual. To not try and show somebody else that God exists and that God loves them too. I've been given that power because of AA, to choose to wake up and make a decision to let God run my life. If I don't do that, I'm working on my own power. My track history with my own power is not very good. I've had the privilege of sponsoring people and watched them grow up in fellowship with Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous and find something better than drinking, I wouldn't be standing at this podium today. And it's because of people like you in this room that carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm standing here a free man. And I owe it back to you that when that newcomer or I get that phone call, no matter how I'm feeling, my life doesn't matter, my hand should be there. It's my responsibility. Because when I walked into that meeting with my head on the table and I wanted help but I just didn't know how to say it, somebody didn't wait for me to come ask for help. They put their hand out and they said, here it is. Do you want it? My life's good today. You know, I've traveled the world. I never could have made it out of 19055 zip code, which is Bloomington zip code. I just couldn't. I would try, but I would always go back because I couldn't. I just couldn't leave. I was stuck. And you know, I went to Spain. That was unbelievable. You know, there's a whole world out there doing the same thing that we're doing tonight. And that is unbelievable. The power of AA. You know? And, you know, I think a lot about, like, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob and the experience they went through when they went through the steps and when they started this whole program, you know? And all of a sudden, you know, I always laugh because if you ever look at the pictures of Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, they look really tired, you know. And Bill Wilson looks mad, you know, like he just wanted to get sober, and then all of a sudden all this responsibility came on to him. I always laugh when I look at his pictures, but, man, he can't come to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting where there's a solution and just even think that it's there's God. I don't know how you can deny this. You know, I just don't know how you can deny it. And I don't know, I can talk about my experience with God. It's my experience with God. It's my understanding. I could sit here and I can tell thousands of stories, you know, what sounds like coincidence, but we all know what's going on in the plan. And, but that's just conceptualizing my experience, you know. If you're in this room tonight and you haven't had that experience or you don't feel that you have, I can tell you this room right here has plenty of people that can show you how to get that experience. You know, and Dr. Bob says that you must not miss it. And if you don't want it, we feel sorry for you. And I feel the same way. When I meet these people that just want to, they come into AA thinking that AA is going to give them, you know, the materialistic world. You know, if they just don't drink, I just feel so bad for them. You know, because that's not going to happen. You know, I came in AA thinking that it was going to get my life together. Well, it got my spiritual life together, and as a result, my materialistic and physical world has gotten better. Maybe not to my wants, because my wants are really out there. But I'm okay with that. I'm at peace. You know what I mean? I wake up in the morning, and I don't feel like putting my head through the wall. Like, I smile today. And I mean it. You know what I mean? It's just an amazing thing. Like, if I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and stayed the same, I would have drank again. But what Alcoholics Anonymous did is it made me a new person, the person I always wanted to be. You know, it says in our book, we were reborn. You know, you don't have to come in here and patch up your life. You have to come in here and give it up and get a new one. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard speakers that were happy, joyous, and free. And then they came to me and they said, you can live like that too. And I wasn't too sure, you know, I had hope. But after going through the steps, I gained faith and belief. You know, in August, I'm going down to the shore with my whole entire family. My sister's coming over from England. I'm going to meet my nephew for the first time. She just had a baby in January. And it makes me, I just can't wait, you know what I mean? Like, when I was drinking, like, I would have planned on going. But I knew I wasn't going to make it. And because of AA, you know, I made that reservation 6 months ahead with no fear. I know I'm going to be there. So almost one day at a time, I continue to just keep my hand out. And, I don't know. I can't see a clock. Right at 15 minutes? You know, I used to, I used to be like, because I went through the steps outlined in the big book, I'd go to meetings and say, this is the only way it can be done, you know. And it does say in a big book, there's no middle road solution. But I would bash people, you know what I mean? I would tell people they're wrong. And it was just me playing God again in AA. And I was being harmful to others, and I was being harmful to myself. And I just read it in Vision for Youth, you know, it says that we know very little. You know, if I sit here and I can tell you what AA is going to be in 10 years, it's just me telling you what I think, and what I think is me playing God, and that's not a good solution for the alcoholic. You know, I've come to find that it's a lot easier to just let things be, you know, whatever the situation is. Just let it be what it is. I've come to find it easier to lose my judgments. Like when something happens, maybe it's good, maybe it's not. You know, it's not for me to judge. You know, I'm allowed to be happy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm allowed to be sad, but I try not to let these feelings dictate what I'm going to do. You know, and you know, when I'm sponsoring somebody, it's funny. You know, I'll share this story. I sponsored this one kid, same age as me, I'm calling him kid. And he was miserable, angry. I was sort of scared to sponsor him because he was ready to explode at any minute, and I thought I was going to be the one there when it happened. And I, to be honest with you, when I sat down with him, as bad as it may sound, I really didn't think he was going to get what this book had to offer. I didn't think he was going to listen. It didn't seem like he was listening when I was reading out of the book with him, and he was reading. It didn't sound like he was there. kept going through the steps, you know what I mean? We did a third step prayer, you know, and, you know, he was, like, drawing a picture while we were just saying the third step prayer. Like, he just was. We did a fourth and a fifth step. And then one day I was walking in Levittown. I was going to a pizza place. And all of a sudden I thought I was being attacked. I feel these hands like come around me. I thought I was getting jumped. And I look behind me and it's him. And he has the best smile that I've ever seen in my life on his face. And at the time I was in my head about something, but you know, it's important for me to constantly stick with the new guys, because when I see this thing work, it reaffirms to me myself that I know it works. You know? And that's the problem. I can go through the steps, but if I'm not giving it away, it's hard for me to see within myself what's happening. But when I can see it in you, and I see these people transform in front of my eyes, I can't deny it. Like, I believe that everybody in here knows that there's a God in this room tonight. We can't see him, we can't hear him. It's a phenomenon, but I know a lot of us believe that it's here right now. You know, it's like traffic on Girard Avenue. You know what I mean? You know it's there when you're going there to work. You know, I know people aren't, some people aren't familiar with Philadelphia, but it's there. There's no reason why. But you know it's there. And that's a phenomenon. Just like Alcoholics Anonymous. People that go through it and experience it know it works. You know? They know it works. Because they've seen it work. There's about, you know, how many people? Did I see the 80 people in this room tonight? It obviously works. You know? And I just, you know, you just go to a meeting and you don't hear the solution, right? And people want to say, just give up on that meeting. You know, I'm here to carry the message, you know. Wherever I go, I don't know where that's going to be, wherever I end up, I've been given the power to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's my responsibility. So if I go to a meeting and I don't hear it, I don't give up on that meeting, I go back. And I share the message. Because maybe there's someone in there, like when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, that just isn't hearing it. You know? And that's not for me to judge, it's just my responsibility to continue to come. So maybe you guys laugh, because sometimes when I talk, I get real mellow. My sobriety date's April 1st, which is April Fool's Day. And it was a big joke, I know. And it's just an awesome thing being sober today. I don't think about drinking. Even better than not thinking about drinking, I don't think about robbing you people. I don't think about robbing the world. And it's an easier way to live. I'm very grateful. I used to be upset that I was born into this world. I'm very grateful to be here. Because I have a short time here, but I have a lot of work to do, and it gives me a purpose, and I never had one in my life. I have a purpose to be here. Mm-hmm. Not for me to figure out. I just show up to the show. It's like a surprise party every day. I love it. I had no idea I'd be here on a Monday night out in Quakertown, you know, and, life is good. If you're in here today and you're not feeling all right with yourself, you're not sure if you want to be in AA, you're not sure if you want to go back out and drink, you're not sure about these steps. I took some steps that I didn't believe in from the start. And just through going through them, faith was born. My life was reborn. And it was all because somebody just carried the message that happened all the way back in the 1930s. It hasn't changed. It won't change. And if you're running into a problem, don't try and figure it out. Open up the book, call your sponsor, and the answer's inside the book. I have a spiritual answer for all my problems, and it works. It truly does. And that's all I got.